I think that up to, and historians, lots of historians always differ on this, I would say up to 1805 / 1807, you can see a very, Napoleon is a continuation of the revolution. And he's a continuation in two ways. First, obviously, and I suppose I was always taught to see this, you know, the domestic side was the most important, that in terms of the domestic legacy of the revolution, he is certainly codifying, he's certainly consolidating the achievements of the Constituent Assembly, the Legislative Assembly, broadly the moderate, if you argue there is a moderate phase to the revolution, the moderate phase of the revolution. And that is clearly the coup de Napoleon and everything that goes with it, from religious toleration to the queer open to talent, to talents, to equality before the law, to the abolition of the so-called, what remained of the feudal system before the revolution, and also administrative centralisation. Thierry Lenz calls, probably rightly, the great consulate, le grand consulat. What's very important, though, and marks a break with the revolution, and I personally think it's one of the great indices of the failure of the revolution, is that one absolutely the crucial component of what the revolutionaries did want to achieve in 1789 is missing in the Napoleonic version of their achievement, which is constitutional government and, for want of a better word, liberty, very broadly, because Napoleon's rule is quite clearly not, and Ambrogio may grimace, and that'll be edited out, I'm sure, I hope so. But you can argue whether or not Napoleon's a dictator, but he certainly is not a constitutional or representative ruler in the way that the constituents of 1789, 1790, 1791, wished their government to be. And the fact that liberty did not survive the essential civil war of the French Revolution seems to me to be its greatest failure, and that the stabilisation of the revolution had to take place without the thing that the early revolutionists had prized above all else, which was liberty and constitutionalism. In terms of foreign policy, I think this is where the break 1805/7 is important. And I think for this, I would follow Jean Tullard's interpretation here, his periodization of the revolution, is that you can see up to 1805 and even beyond Napoleon continuing the foreign policy ideas of the revolution, which are of La Grande Nation, the great nation, the enlarged French nation, expanding up to the natural frontiers, to the Rhine, the Alps and the Pyrenees, with what Tullard calls, in sort of military history terms, a glacis, basically, a buffer zone of satellite states beyond it, insulating France from her potential enemies. And that sort of great nation, or what Tullard calls the Carolingian model based on Charlemagne's empire, holds good, it seems to me, up to the post-Austerlitz period. And then something happens. I think probably because even Napoleon didn't expect the stunning success he had at Austerlitz, at Ulm and Austerlitz, against the Third Coalition, which pulls him into Central Europe. He leaves Western Europe behind. He's pulled into Central Europe in a way I think he thought he never quite would be. And the temptation, therefore, exists from that point on to transform his empire from a Carolingian empire, as Tullard says, into a Roman empire, in which actually he's ruling the whole of Europe rather than Western Europe and satellite states beyond. And there, I think, lie the seeds of his fall, basically. Because from then on, from going and thinking he can be, you know, apart from just being, he thinks he can be just Charlemagne, then the next stage to think he can be Augustus, and the next stage at some point in 1811, 1812 is actually to think he can be Alexander the Great, and that's where everything all collapses.